Honor.
Our fourth case this morning is Miles against the United States.
Very seldom.
Mr. Turley.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Turley. I'd like to use 7 minutes for the opening and reserve three for rebuttals. Your Honors, this case was dismissed too quickly. We certainly understand Judge McKinney's confusion here. Mr. Miles' complaint is hard to follow and very poorly crafted. Judge McKinney recognized that Mr. Miles had pleaded a claim under the Federal Tort Claims Act, and as is proper when a pro se litigant is involved, he clearly explained the reasons for why the claim was untimely. But there is more here. Even though Mr. Miles did not, in a clear 1-2-3 fashion, lay out the elements of a Bivens claims, they're nonetheless in the complaint. Your Honors, I think there are 3 points here.
The problem is that what's not in the complaint is naming any private defendants as parties.
Yes, Your Honor. It's true that Mr. Miles named the United States, and this was a mistake, but it was a correctable mistake. This court noted in Donald that district courts have an obligation to assist pro se litigants in crafting a legal, viable legal document. There it says...
Do they? And the Supreme Court said in McNeil against the United States, another FTCA case filed pro se, that although perhaps complaints should be construed favorably, judges have no obligation to help pro ses comply with the rules or excuse noncompliance. And in this case, the ruling question is Rule 10A, which says that the caption shall include the names of all parties. Now, combining 10A with McNeil, is there anything left here?
I think there is. And I think if we look at Mr. Bivens' complaint, he's not required to plead legal theories. And as
no,
the court...
Look, this is not a question of pleading legal theories. This is a question of naming as parties the people to be sued.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. I understand why you're making the argument you are. We ask you to.
Right.
But I'm trying to figure out whether this line of argument can be reconciled with the combination of McNeil and Rule 10A. That's
Your Honor, I believe it does. And in Donald, the court says that courts may construe pro se complaints as having named defendants who are mentioned only in the body of a complaint. Here, on two occasions, on page 3 and on page 4 of the complaint.
Let's come back to Donald. The question in Donald was whether the district judge erred by denying the plaintiff leave to amend the complaint in a way that would have named the parties. But there was no motion to amend the complaint here. Leave was never denied. The issue that was presented in Donald is simply not presented here. I would like you, if you can, to address the question I am asking about the interaction of McNeil and Rule 10A.
Your Honor, I know that Miles, in his motion to reconsider, does not bring up the fact that there was a claim under Bivens, but he also doesn't bring up a claim under the Federal Tort Claims Act. But this court in Donald does cite a Sixth Circuit case, Burnt versus State of Tennessee, where the court states that it remanded for amendment despite the fact that the plaintiff never requested the opportunity to amend. And here, what we're arguing is that Mr. Miles cannot be held to the same standard as a member of the bar. Mr. Miles filed a pro se complaint from prison, and in that complaint...
Are you acquainted with the McNeil case?
No, sir, I am not.
I suspected as much. Now, the line of argument you're making seems to me completely incompatible with the Supreme Court's decision in McNeil. And it's something that, as Judge Bauer said in the last case, we will need to follow the Supreme Court rather than arguments about how the world should run.
Yes, Your Honor, but I do believe that this court can simply follow Donald. I think that if the court follows Donald, there is a viable claim that Mr. Miles states in his complaint. The court there says in Donald that when the substance of a pro se civil rights complaint indicates the existence of claims against individual officials not specifically named in the caption of the complaint, the district court must provide the plaintiff with an opportunity to amend the complaint. Here, Mr. Miles never even had an opportunity.
The problem is that your client never asked for leave to amend the complaint.
Again, Your Honor, I think it's Mr. Miles is a federal prisoner, and I don't think that he recognized the legal theories. I think the district court had an obligation to if either provide counsel for the very limited purpose of amending the complaint, construe the complaint in the first instance as stating a Bivens claim, or dismiss the claim with prejudice or without prejudice, and provided a clear explanation for why Mr. Miles did not state and name the prison officials.
Here's the language in McNeil. It says, and I'm quoting the Supreme Court, "We have never suggested that procedural rules in ordinary civil litigation should be interpreted so as to excuse mistakes by those who proceed without counsel." This is a unanimous Supreme Court, 1993.
Yes, Your Honor. But at the same point, Donald does say that pro se litigants should be given leeway. And here, he should have at least been given the opportunity to amend the complaint. And the district court should have provided some assistance.
What you're suggesting is that if there's a conflict between the Seventh Circuit and the Supreme Court of the United States, we follow the Seventh Circuit.
No, Your Honor, I'm only suggesting that the district court here had an opportunity to allow a potentially meritorious claim to move forward. It simply could have listed in the body.
You're quite right. He could have.
Yes, Your Honor.
The question really is, he's required to.
In Donald, this court notes that district courts have a social responsibility to construe pro se complaints liberally and to allow ample opportunity for amending the complaint,
right,
Your Honor.
But the ample opportunity was not asked for, and that's what Judge Easterbrook was discussing. That's what the Supreme Court said. You have to ask before you get it, and he didn't. And what you want us to say is that the judge should have told him to do it or how to do it, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the point.
Listen, you're not getting a quarrel with me. I think it would have been nice if the judge had done it. The question is, do we enter an order saying that he's compelled to do it when the Supreme Court said he isn't?
Yes, Your Honor. And he does. Mr. Miles did file a motion for reconsideration, and it's clear there that he doesn't ask to amend. But it's also clear that he's trying. Mr. Miles, as a federal prisoner, is trying to do the best he can.
No question.
To respond to what the district court had noted. But the district court does not list that he did not name the prison officials in their individual capacity. And Mr. Miles,
Had I been the trial judge, I would have told him that. And I would have been perfectly on sound ground. The Supreme Court said I didn't have to tell him.
Yes, Your Honor, we appreciate that. And we think that that would be the right result here. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time. I would reserve the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Carras.
May it please the court, I'm Gerald Carras. I'm an assistant United States attorney representing the United States in this clause. The question arises first, did the district court misconstrue the complaint or was the district court required to construe it as a Bivens complaint? And I don't think they were. First of all, the caption names the United States, but it goes beyond that. It asks for damages against the United States pursuant to the Federal Tort Claims Act. It cites the statute, the Federal Tort Claims Statute. It attaches as an exhibit to the complaint the tort claim notice that was denied, which was a condition prerequisite to filing suit. I don't think there's any real question that Mr. Miles intended to sue the United States and not bring a Bivens action. But if there was a question, once Judge McKinney dismissed the case on the statute of limitations grounds, which he spelled out pretty clearly, Mr. Miles did subsequently file a motion to reconsider. But he doesn't say, wait a second, I meant to sue the individuals, I meant a Bivens. He challenges the judge's determination of the calculation of time.
Back up a minute, though. In the original form complaint, he checked the box that said this was a Bivens claim.
That is correct, Your Honor. There are two boxes, and one says 1983 for state prisoners, and one says Bivens action for federal prisoners.
We
don't know what he meant. He may well have saw federal prisoner, that's me, check the box.
Is this the form that would be used, or would this form ordinarily be used to make a Federal Tort Claims Act?
It would not be necessary for a Federal Tort Claims Act. It appears
so
that
this is the form that's used in the district court for filing a 1983 action or
a claim. That is correct. It appears to have come from the district court.
So, on its face, it was recognizable to the district court as a Bivens form.
That's correct. The form is. The textual complaint isn't. And the judge has, instead of just looking to form, has looked to the substance and has looked pretty carefully at the substance of the complaint. So I don't think there was error, and I don't think there was requirement that he had to construe something that wasn't there or decide that there are defendants who should be in the case who weren't designated as defendants. I believe in the form also it's got a place to set forth defendants, and he specifically, again, I think, sets forth the United States, doesn't say and anybody else or give any indication that is the intent.
But the particular prison actors involved are named in the body of the complaint.
Yes, they are. And if I could use an analogy, if a government driver ran a stoplight and hit your car and you brought a tort claim action, it would not be a defective complaint to say, Joe Smith, employee of the United States, driving government car while on duty, ran a light and hit me. But that would not make the case against Joe Smith personally. It would still be a case against the United States. What he has said, and again, if you look in the conclusion or the relief section, he says the employees of the United States, I think it's in the appellant's appendix at, I want to see. At 6, I think it is. I'm sorry, at 7, in his request for relief, he talks about the government employees acting negligently, causing him resulting in his injury and asking for damages. That is a tort claim. It's clear, and it's certainly not contradicted in subsequent pleadings, particularly his motion to reconsider, which is filed with the knowledge of Judge McKinney's interpretation of the complaint. So he could have said, wait a second, Judge McKinney, you're wrong, but he doesn't do that. So I think it is clear that it is intended as a tort claim. I also think that having named the United States, you cannot amend the complaint post statute of limitations and bring in the individual defendants. There is no knowledge. This is, and I think this is really important. This case is distinguishable from Donald in that the defendant in Donald set forth on a path of conduct of dilatory tactics to run the statute of limitations. And the court seemed to just ignore the acts of the plaintiff in trying to amend his complaint and do what he needed to do. In fact, I think this court was rather critical of the Donald court for its conduct as well as being critical of the defendant in Donald. You don't have anything of that nature in this case. No process ever issued. I am not aware that the individuals who are named in the complaint have any knowledge that they were ever named or were even mentioned or the case even exists. My time is up, so I will sit down.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Carraz. Anything further, Mr. Turley?
Yes, sir. Just a few points. As Judge Tsai pointed out, here's what we know. Mr. Miles filed a civil rights complaint, and he checked mark a box that identified the complaint as a Bivens claim. So the government does concede that there is, next to the Bivens box, something that says federal prisoner, and maybe he checked it for that reason. The other thing we know is that Mr. Miles did cite the Federal Tort Claims Act. In fact, he notes it as Federal Tort Claims Act 28 U.S.C. 1346B 2671 et sec. Of course, this is just simply restating the administrative claim. The problem here is that they're making a huge presumption that Mr. Miles had any idea of the legal theories that these claims were falling under. And I think that's a huge presumption given the quality of this claim. Yes, he did name the United States. That was a mistake. but it was a correctable mistake. This court, we submit that an error was made below. And for this reason, we ask the court to reverse the decision below, remand to the district court, and allow Mr. Miles to proceed on a cognizable Bivens claim. Thank you, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And, counsel, we particularly appreciate the willingness of you and your firm to accept this appeal at our request, and we thank you for the assistance you've been both to your client and to the court.
So thank you very much.
The case is taken under advisement.